We are in the third week of our series on immigration, where we are trying to take a biblical view of how to handle the immigration crisis here in the United States. I'm here again with Pastor Renee, who I think has as much firsthand experience with this as probably anyone you'll meet. And so it's great to have his perspective, great to have his insight. Let me just catch you up on where we've been, and I would encourage you, if you haven't listened to the first two episodes in this series, to go back and do that. But in the initial episode, we asked the question, are open borders the answer? And even a guy like Renee, who again has the biggest heart of anyone I know and who deals with a lot of families who have immigrated to the United States, both legally and illegally, is not in favor of just wide open borders. There needs to be some control as to what's coming into our nation and a way to regulate that. I think we're both in agreement, and I think we set a lot of evidence in that first episode biblically for that perspective. Then last week we talked about amnesty, and is just some sort of blanket amnesty policy the answer, and what would that look like? I encourage you to go back. Again, I don't believe just kind of waving a wand and giving everyone who's ever come into the country amnesty is a biblical perspective on it. And I think go back and listen to last week's episode. But that brings us to maybe the most practical of the episodes in this series, and that is, how do we show compassion to those in need? How do we show compassion to those who are here in the United States, whether legally or illegally, and how do we meet the need at the source? That's the thing that I've really noticed as I've been doing the research on this, as I've been digging into it, is the only way to have long-term sustainability is we've got to be able to start meeting these needs at the source and helping people where they are now. So, Renee, before we get into what you and I should do as believers and how this might play out in our day-to-day life, to help our listeners maybe empathize with people who are in this country, again, whether legally or illegally, you had mentioned something in a previous episode about these unmet promises, these false hopes and false expectations that many people have when they come into the country that have been sold to them, kind of sold a false bill of goods. Talk a little bit more about how that happens, where that misinformation is coming from, because I think that might help our listeners just develop a little bit more empathy.
Yeah, I mean, obviously social media has played a big part in it, right? I mean, TikTok, all these other ways people have connected, you know, has had an impact, because you have people on TikTok coming up and, you know, hanging out on the beach and saying, look, just come to the U.S. This is where the dreams are, right? And people are getting money. And so a lot of misinformation is leading these masses to come to the U.S. But obviously, I feel like there's also something hidden that sometimes we might not know. It's a political move, because, I mean, you can't get a mass of over 100,000 people just rush the border at one time. There's got to be something behind it. But a lot of the people that are coming are like the lowest in the sense of economy, right? They're the lowest, people that are barely making it in their own country. People that don't have nothing to lose. People that basically are bare bottom. And those are the people that are so desperate to risk their lives, to risk their children's lives, just to come across different countries. Because it's not just one, it's not just like get to the border. They have to cross many borders. I mean, there's families from South America that have to cross through Panama, through jungles, where they face a lot of danger. I mean, but the desperation that they have, right, the need that they have is driving them to do so. But then you've got all these, you know, false ideas, false dreams that are being planted through this, you know, platforms, right? And so you now hear immigrants in the U.S. that have arrived illegally, and they're claiming their what they were promised. So who promised that? You know, who promised if you get across, we're going to give you money, we're going to sustain you, we're going to provide for your stay? I mean, who did that? I mean, that is where I feel like there's a hidden agenda that we don't know. I know that that is was driving a lot of these people just to, I mean, back in the days, people were fleeing from immigration. They didn't want to get caught because if you got caught, you were sent back right away. But this time around is way different. Something that we've never seen because the border was open. You get to the border and you get inside the U.S. It's not like they kick you out and wait outside for amnesty or whatever, or for, you know, for whatever asylum, not like that anymore. Now they bring you in the U.S. So like I've been listening to a lot of families that I'm helping. Their next court date is until like, so they enter right now in 2024, in 2023, and their court date is all the way to 2027. I mean, how is that going to work? Where are those people going to live? How are those people going to work? Well, they created a way to provide these people with, you know, social security numbers, work permits, so that they, by so the time that they're going to be here, they're going to be legal to work in the U.S. Now that's the thing. So those people are now jumping into webs, you know, to the platforms like TikTok and, you know, whatever, and showing videos where they made it, and they are in a, you know, living their dreams. And that's what I call a false dream, because it's not going to happen. Everybody that's crossed the border is not going to qualify for asylum. There's no way. Asylum is a hard thing to prove. I mean, the requirements to get asylum, it's a hard thing to provide. You have to have, I mean, when I say tangible proof, you have to have, I mean, proof from your government, proof from your country, proof from the, you know, like how you were targeted and all that. I mean, you can falsify a lot of papers, but there's no way. So most of those people are not going to qualify for asylum. So that's why I say these people have been given false dreams.
So what happens, Renee, if someone doesn't qualify for asylum at that next court date in 2027? Are they deported then?
So here's the problem with that. Okay. So most of them, you're right. Here's the thing. And this is what people don't know. Most of those people never make it to that court. So they just vanish in the U.S. They just stay here. They figure out a way to work. They figure out a way to live. And they know that if they go back to the last court hearing, at that court hearing, the judge can say, all right, thank you for coming. Have a good day. And they ship you right off the bat right there, right? Some, in other cases, are giving, you know, the right to live on their own terms. So basically, they'll say, okay, you got 3 months to pack up and get your stuff ready and, you know, get out of the country.
And these social media, TikTok and things like this that you're speaking of, do you feel is it organized? I mean, are these just random individuals who are posting their personal story, or do you feel like there is someone organizing this from behind the scenes and is pushing these families to make these kind of posts?
Of course. Think about it. You and I can record a video and it can have great content. Will it go viral real fast? No. Right? How do these videos go viral so quick? Somebody's pushing the agenda. Somebody's getting out there to the media, stirring up the pot. I mean, it's not coincidental. It's not like, you know, out of the blue that this happened. No, somebody's moving it, because there's no way that these families, you know, you got, I mean, these guys that, you know, did this damage in New York, right? For example, the guys that beat up the cops. I mean, think about it. They were out of the jail the next day. That doesn't happen in the U.S., right? Well, not before. But now it's happening. Well,
yeah, it didn't used to happen in the U.S. Yeah, unfortunately, like, it happens more and more.
How do those illegal immigrants get away with it? Back in the days, if you as an illegal immigrant committed a fraud, you know, like a whatever violation, right? You committed, you were deported. You were put on hold and boom, immigration got a hold of you and now you were shipped out. You know, I dealt personally with a lot of parents that had kids that were illegal immigrants that didn't do the right things here in the U.S., got caught, got put in jail, and got deported. I mean, I've been there. I've seen it happen. And now is way different. I mean, somebody's organizing this. How do you explain these guys? You have them on video, you know, and who's, you know, look, think about it. They have them on video, they're doing all this damage, and the next day they're out.
Well, I think that particular video you're talking about, the guys in New York that beat up the police officers, I don't know that there's an agenda that's pro illegal immigration that made that go viral. I think that's United States citizens, Renee, who honestly are just, they're fed up. Now, I think they have the right to be fed up with what our government is doing. And that's the trick. And that's what we're talking about today. How can we be fed up with poor government leadership, poor management, but still be compassionate to families who are in need, to not take our frustrations out on them? Because I think that's what's happening. I think now you have, you know, so many what I would call just average Joe Blow Americans. I mean, they've had it. They've had it up to their eyeballs with this ridiculousness.
And I understand that. But see, here's that the reason why I call this the secret agenda is because think about it. Where are they throwing all these illegal immigrants to? They're not throwing them in the high society parts of the U.S. They're not throwing them where, you know, the high class people live. They're throwing them in the places where there's already poverty. They're throwing them in places where people are already struggling to make ends meet. And now you bring all these thousands of people to that, you know, obviously there's something hidden there. This is not something normal that I've seen in the past years. I mean, realize I've been here since the 80s. Okay. And I have dealt with so many illegal immigrants in my lifetime that has never been like this. I mean, illegal immigrants back in the days when they came in, those guys came to work not to like depend on anything. They came to work their butts off. And I know personal by hand, like I know people that arrived here years and years ago, and you go back to their countries, they fulfilled their dreams. They came, worked, went back home, and now they're okay because they're living, you know, with a nice house and everything. But the way it is now is different. Something's moving this. It's not, you know, yes, I know, you know, every citizen's upset now because of what's happening. We're upset about the government for doing what they did. But I still believe that there's something hidden because, I mean, think about these guys. I when I started looking at this video, not just those guys, but every video that's out there right now about illegal immigrants. And you look at the, especially because they're targeting Venezuelan people, right? And not all Venezuelans are bad. I mean, there's a big number that is doing a damage, right? And they're Venezuelans. But when you look at them, these are people that just barely arrived to the U.S. And they're wearing name brand clothing that no illegal immigrant wears. When I deal with some illegal immigrants that just arrived, they're coming in flip-flops. They're coming with bare bottoms, with nothing on their backs, no clothes, nothing. So how you tell me that these people that beat up the cops are wearing name brand clothing, they're in style like New York style, and they just got here? I mean, something's off, right? But I mean, like that's just my personal opinion. I feel like there's a secret agenda with this government and whoever's moving these videos, because they're just, any video right now that's about illegal immigration, it's going viral. You record something, boom, it goes viral. And the reason behind that is because they're trying to project an agenda. Like I said before, they're trying to invite all these people to come across. Because coming here, you know, you got all these people that they can get away with anything, which is not true, right? I know our justice system might have flaws, but you cannot get away with everything. You're going to pay the consequences if you break the law, right? But you got these ideas there that they're being thrown out there that if they get here, they're going to be sustained by our government, right? So like in New York, for example, people are giving, they're giving people money, like food stamps and things like that, you know, to sustain them. I mean, you got Americans that are starving, that are U.S. citizens, and we don't take care of them. So that's why I said there's a hidden agenda. There's something that we don't see.
Well, that's going to lead us into really the heart of today's conversation. In spite of that, maybe that's the right way to say it. In spite of that, we still need to be compassionate. So whether we agree with the politics that are going on behind this, God has called us to love our neighbor as ourselves, and that there's no qualification there. In fact, they asked Jesus when he gave that commandment, well, who is my neighbor? And if you know the story, Jesus answered with the parable of the Good Samaritan. And Jesus tells a story of a Jewish man who's robbed and who's beaten and who's basically left for dead in a ditch. And a priest goes by, another Jewish person goes by, and basically just go right by the guy, just overlook him. They don't care to stop. And it's a Samaritan who stops and cares for him, who takes him to an inn, who pays to have him cared for. And if you know anything at all about the relationship between the Jewish people and the Samaritans and the culture of Jesus, to say that they were enemies would be the understatement of the year. They absolutely hated each other, right? So if that's who I'm supposed to love as myself, I think what Jesus is communicating is that anyone I come into contact with is my neighbor. So how do you and I as believers, let's break this down, Renee, into how do we show compassion to people who are here in the United States, again, whether legally or illegally, because my perspective is that biblically, you and I as individuals, whether they're here legally or illegally, doesn't really impact God's call on us to treat them with dignity and respect. Now, I think the way the government would look at their situation, and this was more in our first episode, should be different, could be different, but you and I as individuals, we're called to love them as ourselves. So how does that play out for you? Give us some practical ways that you're doing that, because I know you are, but then how would you encourage and how would you challenge listeners, believers who are listening to this podcast, to be compassionate to people in their community, whether they're here legally or illegally?
Yeah, so I think we are called to show compassion. I mean, there's a lot of people that are already here. You know, obviously these people are not at fault. I don't blame them for trying to survive. I don't blame them for trying to make it to the U.S. because I know that the reason why they're here is because they want a better life for them and for their kids. So, you know, obviously my heart is to be there. If I can provide something, a meal or something, I will do that. You know, right now I'm working with a lot of families and, you know, I'm doing everything I can to, you know, provide the needs that they have. You know, obviously some of them I interview and, you know, I kind of get the sense of what they want. Some people, I'll be honest, some people are just here to take advantage of the source, but the majority of these people are not. And the ones that I interview, I can tell you on firsthand, they're not. And so obviously my stand is to help them. And I've been doing so, you know, placing them with the right organizations, placing them with the right, you know, places for them to get some kind of help. And, you know, we've been able to find and partner up with a few organizations here locally. And we're placing families in, you know, apartments and stuff like that. And now they're looking for jobs. They don't just want to depend. They want to give back. They, you know, every conversation that I've had so far with a lot of the illegal immigrant families that are arriving is that we don't want handouts. We want to be, you know, able to sustain ourselves. We want to feel like we can do it. We came to the U.S. to work, and that's what we want. We just want to work. We just want to be able to provide to our families. We don't want to depend on anybody, you know? So obviously, you know, that drives me to even have a more compassionate heart to them. And so, you know, like the other, you know, a few weeks ago, I ended up going down to Salt Lake around 11 o'clock at night. And I got there like around 1, picking up a family of 6. You know, we're picking up a 11-month-old, 2-year-old, 8-year-old, 13-year-old, and both parents that took a bus from New York all the way to Utah. They didn't know how Utah was going to be, but, you know, they got a hold of me and I said, we'll do what we can. And praise God, we've been able to provide, you know, and they're getting the help that they need.
I think this is a great example of where we can be united but not uniform. And what I mean by that, Renee, is I have a different perspective of you a little bit. You mentioned that, you know, they're not at fault. And I just have to be honest with you, brother. I don't agree with that statement. I mean, they entered illegally, so I think they bear some of the responsibility. But where we are united is I 100% agree that my calling, my obligation as a Christian is to still be compassionate to them, to still try and help meet their needs, regardless of whether or not I believe they're at fault or not. Right. I mean, that's one thing I do want our listeners to think about. We do that all the time. If we had a child who got stuck in drug abuse or, you know, some other substance abuse, we wouldn't quit helping them because we said, well, they had a part to play in that. Now, you know, eventually we have to put limits where we know the difference between helping and enabling. And I think that's part of what you're talking about, Renee. We don't want to enable people. But we want to help them. We want to be compassionate. It's interesting to me, you know, our church, as you know, Renee, is right next to a food pantry.
Mm-hmm.
And I give food to that food pantry regularly. And often we'll have people come over to the church who are seeking additional help. We just helped a guy with some rent money and some other needs just in the last week. And I don't know if he's here legally or not. And quite honestly, it doesn't matter. I know the need. I know the guy is working. I know he's trying to provide for his family. And so I felt called to help that. It is interesting to me how, when we're trying to make that decision between enabling and helping, how many people at the food pantry on a weekly basis drive a much nicer car than I drive. So I do think we just need to be wise in how we're caring for people, and that we're trying, you know, the old saying, you know, give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day, but teach a man to fish, you know, he'll eat the rest of his life, that we try to enable them to be able to become more self-supportive.
I have a different, the way I've dealt with that point, because I agree with you in the sense of when you look at the food pantry and the people that come, and sometimes they're driving, you know, like a $80,000 car, truck and stuff like that, and they pull up. It used to bug me a lot, you know, obviously, because I teach people not to take advantage of a system. If they're well off, they should leave that for those people that really do need it. But then one day I realized, you know what? Sometimes we may have nice things because at a point in our life, we were well, but then things happen. Right. And, you know, we don't know if that guy that's driving that $80,000 truck is still being able, you know, he's paid off or, you know, he got it when he was, you know, well, but that's how I look at it now. It's like, I can't determine just because of that, if that person needs it or not. So I just say, you know what, let's help, you know. But when I say about they're not at fault, I do want to clear this because I don't want people to think that I'm okay with people breaking the law, because no, I don't think people should break the law, but obviously to me, they're here already. And that's what I mean when they say it's not their fault. I mean, they didn't make the decision, obviously, but they're already here. They've entered. They, you know, like if you look at right now, the vast majority that has entered have been let, you know, entered into our country. You know, these people are here. That's what I mean about they're not at fault, because the system received them. I mean, the people received them at the border, and then they just threw them into the U.S. Back in the days, you couldn't do that. Back in the days, you could not, you know, do that. I mean, there's other things I can say, but I definitely tell you that back in the days, you couldn't enter. As soon as you enter, whether it be from Tijuana, whether it be whatever border, they shipped you back right away. And now it's different, you know?
James 2:15-16 says, suppose you see a brother or sister who has no food or clothing, and you say, goodbye and have a good day, stay warm and eat well, but then you don't give that person any food or clothing, what good does that do? Now, this is specifically talking about other believers. Yeah. You know, it says, suppose you see a brother or sister. But man, what a reminder to me. I mean, Renee, I think you and I both would say man does not live by bread alone. And the biggest need people have is Jesus. Amen. More than food, more than shelter, more than clothing. But those are other needs as well. You know, we need to meet the spiritual need first and foremost, but we do need to be meeting physical needs. And many of these families, I mean, I've met families, Renee, that you've been helping. They're brothers and sisters in Christ. They're believers. They have a faith in Jesus. And so, you know, again, regardless of their immigration status or regardless of their country of origin, they're part of the family of God. And as our brother and sister, for us to just kind of turn a blind eye or say, hey, I'll pray for you, you know, I'll pray that God will provide, but we have the ability to help them in some way physically and we don't, that's sinful.
Yeah.
We need to be willing to step up and do what we can do. Now, you know, our resources are limited. I'm not encouraging a listener to put their own family in a position where you can't eat, you know, to help another family, but most of us aren't in that position. You know, most of us could afford to give a little food or a little money to someone on a regular basis, and we would still have food on the table. We might not be able to go out and eat at Applebee's two times a week or whatever your favorite restaurant is, but we still have food on the table. And so I think that's something that we should just evaluate as believers. You know, what in my budget shows that I care about the less fortunate? What in my budget shows that I'm willing to be the hands and feet of Jesus? Do I have a regular category in my budget of giving that's outside of giving to the church, right? So I know for my wife and I, we have a certain percentage of our income that we just give off the top. Any money that comes in, we give a certain percentage to the church. But we also try to be intentional about giving money to the less fortunate. And I need to get better at that. Even though we try to be intentional, I don't have a set amount that we give away every month. And as you and I have been going through this series, I feel like God's leading me in that direction, that it's part of my budget. I need to have a giveaway line item. A line item that is just for me to have my eyes open, my ears open for people in need and be able to give.
Yeah, I mean, that's what God calls us to do. And I think that that's what God puts in our hearts as believers, right? We can't just cross our hands and say, well, you know, I mean, let God help you, right? I mean, God put us here for a reason. I always believe that if you come in contact with some people in your life, it's because God is putting them there in your life. And the reason why he puts them in your life is because he wants you to make an impact in their life, to bless them. You know, sometimes the biggest blessing that I received, it hasn't been money, hasn't been material things. It's been the ability to help someone and to see the joy that can bring that to a family. Maybe it wasn't something that I thought it was worth a lot of money or, you know, whatever, but whatever I did for that family brought so much joy. And after seeing that over and over, it just has brought so much blessing to my life and so much joy that I can get up every morning with a smile. You know, I can get up every morning, you know, with this joy in my heart that I know that God is putting all these people around me. And I'm like, you know what? I want to do something. I mean, I sometimes dream. You know, I tell God, man, imagine if I was a millionaire, I probably would be broke by now because I would be helping everybody. You know, that's my heart. That's being honest. My wife jokes about that. She's like, man, you don't give me away because I'm your wife. Otherwise, you will be giving everything away, you know. But the thing is that I don't know if this is me, though. This is not, I don't want anybody to feel guilty. But this is what God has dealt with me in my heart, that material possession doesn't really mean that much to me. That's not what brings me joy. What brings me joy is to serve people. What brings me joy is to be able to do something for someone, you know, and I always look for the opportunities to do so. I'm always in the hunt, you know, to see who I can help next, what I can do. And sometimes it's not providing a meal, or sometimes it's just listening sometimes, you know, sometimes it's just talking with someone. But, you know, obviously right now in the times we're living, yes, it's providing a meal and, you know, being able to cook for someone. You know, just the other day I had 20, 25 people over my house and I fed everybody. And you know how much it cost me to feed everybody the other day? $75. With $75, I fed 25 people. Now, obviously, I made tacos, but, you know, hey, but tacos went a long way. And people ate fresh. My wife was next to me while I was cooking the meat, and she was preparing handmade tortillas. And I could see the joy on my kids. I could see the joy in my wife, you know, and I can see the people there felt embraced. You know, they didn't feel judged. They didn't feel, you know, pity. They felt loved, because that's what Jesus called us to do.
I think for our listeners, you can be creative. You know, maybe you can't give money on a regular basis to people less fortunate than you. Maybe it is being hospitable, as Renee just shared. Maybe it's inviting someone over for a dinner. Maybe it's serving. Maybe you could serve at a local food pantry that's helping those who are in a tough spot. Maybe it's forming a community yard sale, but everything is free. You know, stuff you were just going to give away and donate anyway. And so you pool your neighbors together and you have a yard sale where people can come and get clothing, or people can come and get needed items. So there are ways that all of us can be compassionate, even if maybe, you know, we don't have a lot of excess income. So that's dealing with families here, right? That's dealing with individuals that are in our local communities that we can physically impact. What I want to wrap up the podcast with today, Renee, is how do we meet this need? How do we address poverty at the source? Because I really believe when you look at the numbers, when you look at the 3 billion people, according to the World Bank worldwide, who make less than $2 per day. And let that sink in for a minute. There are 3 billion people in the world who make less than $2 per day. Currently, the U.S. has about 1 million legal immigrants annually. Even if we quadrupled that, let's say that we wanted to allow 4 million people to come into this country legally, that doesn't even make a blip on the radar for the 3 billion people who are living in the worst conditions, who are living in the most poverty. So I really believe if we're going to have an impact worldwide, if we're going to really meet this need of poverty, we have to figure out how to get to the source. And so we're just going to talk about a couple different ways. And we don't have all the answers, because then you're dealing with foreign governments and their, you know, their ability to misuse funds. Renee, I know you and I both know horror stories. I mean, we've seen horror stories play out. But this is what's really been working on my heart for the last several weeks as we've been doing these episodes. I have a really good friend, a family friend, husband and wife and 6 daughters, just an incredible family. And on their wall in their home, they have a little mural painted, and it says, "Live simply so that others may simply live." And then underneath that, they have pictures of all of these children around the world that they are sponsoring, that they're sending money to every month for food and education. Now, this is a family that I don't know how much he makes, but he's got a very high-tech, white-collar job. He's a brilliant guy. I'm sure he makes 6 figures. You would never guess it. They don't live like the average American family lives. They live simply so that others can simply live. Like, they really live it out. And it's just been such a reminder to me that most of us live in such abundance in the United States. And what would it look like for most of us to sponsor a child overseas? I would say almost every single listener could sponsor at least one child. Now, you might have to reduce how often you eat out to do that. You might have to go without Starbucks 1 week out of the month. But I mean, really, almost everyone in the United States could spend $20 to $30 a month, which is what a lot of these programs are, to sponsor a kid overseas so that that child could eat and get nutrition and get some education. Now, you know, we would encourage Renee, maybe you can speak to this. We would encourage people to do their due diligence, to find out how much of the money they're donating actually ends up going to the families and to the children, because there are some organizations out there that are a lot more top heavy than others. I know you put boots on the ground, and I want to give you an opportunity to talk about what you're doing in Mexico right now, what you're doing in El Salvador. But is there anything else you would point out or you'd like to add if somebody's thinking about sponsoring someone overseas?
Yeah, so you actually just nailed it. You mentioned that they have to do their homework, right? You gotta realize a lot of these organizations that that create this sponsor child thing, they have a lot of people working, and it's not, they're not working for free. Those nonprofit organizations have to be run by people. And so a lot of the money that comes in usually is to pay salaries. And so what makes it to these children is probably, I'd be surprised how much makes it. So obviously I'm not going to criticize that. I mean, obviously there's organizations that are, that donate the whole thing, right? I know there's probably good organizations, but I think the best thing to do is, do your homework, right? Find out, right? Because I mean, we can, nowadays there's technology that we can find out where the money goes and how much, and it breaks it down. In my part, obviously if we want to make a little dent, I mean, it's going to be hard, but I challenge the local churches to step up in a way to find connections across, the countries with other churches, that have, the heart for the community. I met the church that we partnered with about 7 years ago. And man, it's just a church that is out there in the community. They didn't have a lot of funds, yet the little funds that they had, they invested in, where the need was, outside of the church, outside of the four walls. People were just, they're starving. There's needs everywhere, right? And they were just there, going out. And that's when I met them. And I jumped on board. I said, I want to help. How can I help? And obviously after that, we started, making events across here, and we partner up and we started doing, cookouts and raising funds one way or another. And we worked really hard to sustain. And then we were able to pick up, two orphanages, two elderly homes where we pick up elderly from the street, people that have been abandoned by their kids, whatever, and they're just living under a bridge. We go to those bridges and we pick them up. And we take them to these places and we give them a room, a decent bed, and we provide now food, at least 3 meals a day. And somebody may say, well, that's not my problem. That's the government's problem over there. But as a Christian, right, God calls us to do something. And you said something that obviously I don't want to make anybody feel guilty that, we're trying to pressure them to doing something that they don't feel comfortable doing. But in reality, we can all go off, from a couple of, Starbucks, that's what, $7. Sometimes we go more than once a week, and we spend tons of money on stuff that we can say, I want to provide for this. And there's great organizations. So like right now, what we're doing, I'm contemplating on the idea of helping another church down in Central America, El Salvador. This church is providing meals for 80 families right now. And they don't have the resources. But if they don't do something about it, these families starve. And we're talking about, you talked about people making less than $2, a day. Now, firsthand, I know how much these people make. In my country alone, people are making under $10 a day. So that doesn't even cut it when one egg costs about 60 cents, 60 cents of a dollar. That's how much an egg costs. Now imagine meat. There's people that haven't tried meat for months, and not because they don't want to, it's because they can't afford it. So now this church is doing what they can. And so my goal is to create a way that I can help them. And they create food baskets. They don't just hand out money. Obviously, they create food baskets for family. And what they do is they put all the essentials. Obviously, they don't put meat or chicken, but they put everything else, right? Non-perishable that they can cook meals with. And they provide them a food basket that will last a family of 5 3 weeks. Now, the cost of that food basket is $20. And so $20 a month feeds a family for 3 weeks down in that country. mean, $20. It's not like it's going to break us. It's not going to break our bank. $20. But that's, you know, us personally being there, right? We've been there. So we don't have to pay anybody. We don't have to pay, you know, anybody, because everything is done through the volunteers of the church, right? And so every cent that we collect goes to that, and we provide. So like right now in Mexico, we do mission trips. At least, you know, we're doing it twice a year with people, and I do twice a year just by myself taking the stuff down. And we provide food baskets to families. I mean, there's thousands of families that come. We could only provide limited resources, right? Because we don't have tons of money. But every time we go on a mission trip, we buy about 380 food baskets and we hand them out. And that's not just food baskets. We buy shoes. We buy clothing. We buy, you know, school supplies. We buy whatever we can get our hands on. And we take it across. And we provide. Now, somebody may say, well, there's needs here. But there's a lot of organizations here every year that provide school supplies. I mean, there's no need. I mean, I'm not going to say there's no need, but there's a lot of resources here. I feel like sometimes here in the U.S., people don't know. I think there's no information out there. And that's why sometimes people don't get the needs that they can't, you know, the help that they can. But across the border, we're making a little dent. And I think that's where we should start targeting, finding ways where we can impact those places where the need is.
Yeah, I would encourage our listeners, if you attend a church that doesn't have any international outreach at all. Now, I don't want to offend anyone. I'm not saying that international needs are more important than needs here at home, but they're not less important. Guys, they're not less important. James 1:27 says, "Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world." There's nothing in that verse that says to look after orphans and widows in your own country. It just says to look after orphans and widows in their distress. So it's wherever they are. So as believers, we have an obligation to help those right here in our towns and our cities, for sure, for sure. So I hope that your church is doing something in the local community. But if that's all they're doing, I would encourage you to talk to the leadership and say, hey, how can we make an impact in the places that need it most? Because if we don't start helping some of these underdeveloped countries, if we don't start meeting the need where it is, we'll never turn the tide of the illegal immigration that's coming to this country, because they don't have any opportunities there. They don't have any hope there. Another verse that really jumps out at me is Hebrews 13:2-3. It says, "Don't forget to show hospitality to strangers. For some who have done this have entertained angels without realizing it." I think that speaks to those that are already here in our country. But then verse 3 says, "Remember those in prison as if you were there yourself. Remember also those being mistreated as if you felt their pain in your own bodies." This is talking about believers that are not in our local communities, believers that are, again, he's talking about physical imprisonment here, but imagine the prison of hunger. You know, imagine waking up every day and not having enough food to eat. Like, those are things that should concern us. Those are things we should care about. And God's a big God. You know, God's got unlimited resources. So we should be praying about those things first and foremost. But then when God calls us to act, we should act. So, you know, I know that I'm proud to be a part of what Renee and our church is doing down in Ensenada, Mexico. We have a partner church down there that is meeting so many needs in the community. And it's exciting to hear what Renee's trying to launch in El Salvador. And I've just been convicted. So full disclosure, I've never sponsored a child internationally. I've always had an excuse, one reason or another, not to. I'm going to meet needs here locally instead, this or that. And I've been convicted throughout this series that God's calling us to do that. So that's something my wife and I are going to step out in faith, and we're going to do that. So hopefully this has given everybody some things to chew on, some things to think about. And hopefully, guys, really our heart in this series is that your politics wouldn't be the primary factor that determines how you view the immigration conversation, but that God's word would be the primary factor in how you do it. So thanks so much for joining us. Remember, you can get more resources to have conversations like this with your family, with your small group, or with your mentor at pursuegod.org.
Hey, listeners, this is Brian Dwyer reminding you to rate this show on your favorite podcast app. That really does help us when you do that. That way more people can discover this podcast and start listening. And also, don't forget to share the podcast with a friend.